Hey everybody, welcome back to From Complex to Queens, Omar Apple Sources Minor League Podcast. I'm Steve Saipa, and I'm joined this week by Lucas Vlahos and Thomas Henderson. How are you guys doing this week?
I'm doing good. How are you doing?
All right, I'm getting over being sick, so if I cough on this podcast, I apologize.
He has not COVID this time, thankfully.
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't test positive, and then I did test positive, and so I don't know if what's what anymore. I went to the doctor, and they said that I have an upper respiratory infection, but that was like a week plus after my initial positive, not positive COVID, so I don't even know. No one knows nothing anymore. It is what it is. Before we go on, I just want to mention just everyone out there, you know, listeners, just keep Ken in your thoughts and prayers this week. He could definitely use it. So we're going to start off now, promote extend trade. And May the 4th just passed. So we are all individuals well vested in the lore of Star Wars.
I may or may not be playing Jedi Survivor right now.
Oh, okay. and we're also well versed in video game esque things. So, what classes are we going to promote extend trade?
Yes.
We have the Jedi Guardian, the Jedi Consular, and the Jedi Sentinel.
I remember when these classes were tied, like, almost, like, it was just an excuse to get the lightsaber color you wanted, basically. It was, like, blue, yeah. Green, yellow. I don't, was that in KOTOR? Or,
it is.
Yeah.
Like, and it has different, like, very different force, but, like, there were, like, a few, like, unique force abilities, but I don't remember what they are offhand.
Because I remember wanting a blue lightsaber and not loving the Guardian Force abilities or something along those lines. Or maybe I wanted the yellow one because it was different. I don't remember.
Now lightsaber colors are a democracy. So
It's all. I think I used to choose Sentinel all the time.
Yeah, I think Sentinel had the coolest abilities.
Because I think they had the offensive abilities, if I'm remembering it correctly. It's been a minute. But I'm pretty sure they had more. Sentinels had more, like, it was a more of a tank build. If we're gonna go deep into RPG discussions, and that's what I want my main character to always be, because I feel like it's easier to reliably build up health that way. So I think I always chose Sentinel.
I'm a
Guardian, just felt balanced.
Yeah,
you were what?
I'm a counselor guy, because you can always boost your stats with force powers.
Yeah. That feels like one you choose when you're a little older and, like, kind of understand the functionality more. But when you're, like, 12, you're like, that's boring. It's like
playing numbers Pokemon. Go brr.
it's like playing Pokemon when I was, like, 10 and not choose and just having four attack moves because I was like, the other things don't do anything. And then when I'm like 25, I'm like, oh yes, but now I could use this to boost that, you know,
set up.
Exactly. Leech. Like, I'm actually thinking about it.
Leech seed. Hell yeah.
Poison bar. What's the rock one that does damage when your opponent changes Pokemon? I don't remember. Anyway.
Oh, it's kind of like things on the floor. That
I forget what it's called.
They're like little spiny, like pointy rocks.
Yeah.
I don't even remember that power. I was only a Generation 1 and 2 person. Never played anything past Pokemon Gold and Silver.
I think for me, I still am trading a Consular just because at the time I played the game, it was the one I would choose least frequently. Also always been more of a blue lightsaber kind of guy, not into the green.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think that one's green.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not into the green. So, Guardian or Sentinel.
I'm trying Fallen Order again because, like, I struggled having fun with it the first time through, even though, like, I know I know it's fun, but like, and I've seen people play it, but for me personally, I was like frustrated a little by it. Mm-hmm. And I have an orange lightsaber, and I'm like, you know what? It's kind of lit. Like, we need weird colors. Like, bring those back. Like, Mace Windu, he wanted it. Like, I'm pretty sure Samuel Jackson was like, no, give me purple or something.
That's literally what happened, according to both he and George Lucas. Is like, I want a purple lightsaber. That, of course, says motherfucker on it, so.
But that's cool. Like, the weird colors are fun.
Mm-hmm. If that game had a fast travel feature, I would actually, like, go back and finish it.
But well, good news. The new one has fast travel, I'm told. I'm not at the point where I've unlocked fast travel yet. I'm just getting my ass handed to me by a Rancor repeatedly right now.
Yeah, I've heard Survivor is a lot better, even though, like, people really like Fallen Order.
Fallen Order was good, not great, I think. That's my stance on it. I enjoyed it.
I just remember being stuck on a planet, and there's this fucking puzzle with, like, giant balls, like boulders.
Ah, the Zepho, yes.
Yeah.
I just did that, like, 3 days ago.
Oh. And then, like, I finished it, and I'm just like, wait, I don't know how to get out of here now. I just want to go back to my ship.
It was very much a game while I was playing it, even the first time. I was like, I could see the sequel being really good when they figure out what works and what doesn't work, but right now it's not there yet. And that's what seems to have happened with Survivor.
I think everyone loved Fallen Order just because we'd been so starved for good Star Wars video game content for so long.
And I like Hal. Like, legitimately think he's, like, a pretty good character.
Yes.
Yeah, the story is decent. The characters are decent. The graphics are, like, I'm not a big graphics person, but, you know, like, something like Star Wars and awesome graphics, it's, like, built, you know, like, they just go together. The graphics are great. Like, it's a good game, just like one or two flaws, but they're just like really big flaws.
Yeah, I kind of agree. I don't. Yeah, it was good, not great. I'm never gonna go replay it. Like, I'm much more likely to honestly go back and replay Knights of the Old Republic because, like, even though the gameplay is aged, like, that's it's just more enjoyable to me. Funny on Cal Kestis, I'm rewatching. It's like Lance Reddick died recently, which sucks. Mm-hmm. And he was one of my favorite characters in Fringe. I don't know if anyone has watched that show, but I'm rewatching an episode, and I'm like, and there's this ginger, like, kid who's a character in one episode, just like a one-off episode. I'm like, huh, this guy looks familiar. His voice sounds kind of familiar. Well, who the hell is this? Keep in mind, this episode was filmed in, like, 2008 or 2009.
Yeah, he must have been young at that time.
Yeah, and then it finally hits, like, holy shit, it's Cal Kestis. Cal Kestis is in the back of this car using mind control, literally, on these people. I'm like, oh, shit, cool. Nice. Also, that ad that Mark Hamill did for Survivor is absolutely fantastic. I don't know if you guys saw that or not.
Yeah, I saw it. It was really good.
Basically, Steve, you did see it?
No.
So basically, they have the actor who plays Cal Kestis in his mocap suit, like, doing lightsaber stuff, and Mark Hamill is sitting by like a coach, like, you telling him to use the Force, complaining he never got to use two lightsabers. It's very well done. It's a very funny commercial.
That's funny.
I love Mark Hamill.
All right. Moving on now to our way too early draft updates. This week, my guy called Carrig, his team, San Diego State University Aztecs, they were supposed to play California State University Northridge at the beginning of the week, but that game got canceled. And they played San Diego State over the weekend. They were supposed to play five games on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, which is kind of crazy. Two doubleheaders in a row. Yeah, because of, you know, a lot of cancellations earlier on. They ended up only playing four of the five. They canceled one of the doubleheaders, the one that was scheduled on Friday. It was just outright canceled. So not including the game that they're currently playing right now. But over three games, Carrig is 1-for-10 with two strikeouts. Kind of a boring week. He's currently hitting .322, .347, .509 with two home runs, 11 stolen bases, 8 walks to 17 strikeouts. So very much stock is down and would not draft. But I don't know what the hell. I mean, Lucas, you've been out there. Like, what? I thought California is supposed to be so nice. They canceled a lot of games here. What the hell's going
well,
on?
Well, they finally got all the rain they've been missing for the last 10 years, basically.
Yeah, that's true.
It's also an El Nino year, so the weather patterns are all fucky. It's crazy though. Like, climate's normal though. Nothing to see here. Move along.
It's going well. It's going well.
This is fine.
This is normal. All natural.
All right. Lucas, MSU outfielder Colton Ledbetter.
Bedletter, yes. Excellent.
Bedletter.
We could spoonerize even within his last name. Excellent. He only played two games this week. They're playing right now, I think. This is always the challenge with recording on Sunday. Like, the Sunday games either are still happening or... anyway, only two games, 3-for-9, a steal, two strikeouts. Nothing exciting, nothing dramatic. He's still hitting 325, 461, 598 on the year. Lots of talk about him being a really analytical darling in terms of his exit velocities and launch angles, and honestly, that all makes sense from watching him. It's like, yep, that ball is smoked, and it's at like 14 degrees, and it's perfect. Some more mixed, like I can't say that I've watched enough of him to like be confident he's a center fielder, but I think he looks fine out there. But who knows? Even if he can hit enough to do what he's doing now in the corner, that's totally fine. Also has still reached base in all but two games this season. So, and this is in the SEC. This is like legit competition. I don't understand how he's not already like pumped to the top of draft boards, but he's still floating in that 20 to 40 range, I think. He could be there.
That'd be nice.
We got about 1 month or so left of college baseball, and then we got about 2 months left until the draft, so we'll see.
I still hate how late it is.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, it makes sense objectively, but I hate it. All right. Last but not least is Hamilton High School's shortstop/quarterback, Rokolowski.
His week was also boring. He only played two games, went 0-for-4-1, which is a surprise. That's like his first 0-for since like early April, rather. So obviously he hits the ball a ton, but he just went 0-for-4-1 game, and then he went 2-for-4 the next game. They won both. The game they went 0-for-4 and they won 9-0, so whatever. But
it's probably like, you guys got this, I'm taking a
break. Whatever. Yeah. But you know how it goes. High school kid, real good, gonna go to UCLA. That's really what it seems to be right now.
Yep. All right. Now we move on to Mets affiliates this week. And Syracuse Mets, they played a series against the Lehigh Valley Iron Pigs, which is the Phillies AAA affiliate. And they went 1-5 against them. Not a great week. And they are 15-18 on the season now, which is 9.5 games behind the Norfolk Tides in the International League East.
Norfolk is Baltimore, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And they're really... Yeah.
Well, yeah.
It's smart to have your teams around your area of influence. Tides are like running away with the division. You know, Syracuse is bad, don't get me wrong, but 9.5 games is not really as bad as it seems, because the number two team, the Jacksonville Jumbo Shrimp, they're in second place. They're 7 games behind. So 7 games, you know, 9.5 games. Figure, you know, Syracuse is maybe, you know, 1 or 2 games from being in second place. You got to look on the bright side.
Because they're bad in like a prospecty way. Mm-hmm. They like win games, but like, yeah, no one's there. You know, they're winning games because like Tim LoCastro gets a hit, not because like a prospect, you know, yep. Like obviously
got a home run today, not just a hit.
Oh, I know that's why that's why I was thinking about him. He had a home run today, but. Like, they're kind of better than Syracuse was, in a way, than they used to be, because they used to be, like, old veterans and bad. But now with – it was Beatty to start the year, and Ronnie and Mauricio – Mauricio and Vientos, they're hitting – they have a couple prospects who are really destroying the ball. and the rest of the veterans are like good enough players for a AAA that they're just going to win some games.
Yeah, I mean, the problem with Syracuse is their pitching just is terrible because they're the most offensive minded team, I think, in the entire International League. I haven't checked in maybe like a week or two, but like as a team collectively, they're hitting like 288 or something like that, which is crazy when you
the run environment is also on the moon.
Well, yeah, that too. But when a team is hitting that good, you know, and there's still three games under 500, that puts things into perspective. Well, speaking of being under 500, let's move on to the next team in the system, the Binghamton Rumble Ponies. And they played the Somerset Patriots, the Yankees AA affiliate, and they also went 1-5 in the week. So Rumble Ponies are 11-14 on the season now, and they are 7.5 games behind the Portland Sea Dogs, Boston's AA affiliate, for first place in the Eastern League Northeast. Brooklyn Cyclones, they played the Aberdeen Ironbirds, who is older Orioles' high A affiliate, and they split the series 3-3. So Brooklyn is 9-14 on the season, and that's dead last in the South Atlantic League North, 7.5 games behind the Hudson Valley Renegades, Yankees affiliate, first place in the division. And lastly are the St. Lucie Mets, and they play the Jupiter Hammerheads this week. Jupiter is the Marlins affiliate, and they went 2-4, and that leaves St. Lucie 7-20 on the season now. Yeah.
St. Lucie is bad. I thought St. Lucie was actually going to be pretty okay this year. I was wrong.
Yeah, I'm kind of was like the opposite with Syracuse. Syracuse has like all of the prospecty bats, and St. Lucie, we were expecting to have a lot of prospecty pitchers, but a lot of those prospecty pitchers, unfortunately, you know, hurt. Ziegler could have conceivably started at St. Lucie. He's hurt. Joel Diaz, Tommy John, he also conceivably could have started at St. Lucie. You know, who else is out there? Lionel Avias is not having a great start to the year.
I thought DeBrock would be there, but he went to Brooklyn anyway and is now hurt.
Yeah, and he's hurt. So, yeah, I mean, it's just, it's not great. You know, we're gonna go over the top 25 prospects and kind of take some temperatures after the break in a couple of seconds. But, yeah, it's not good.
Yeah.
The whole org is just a depressing place right now, if we're being honest.
Yeah. It's somehow gotten worse. The minors, yeah. I don't really know how. Like, they've made seemingly pretty smart hires, and it's obviously not doing anything. It's just no one's really getting better. Well, a few guys are, like a very few. And I think we'll talk about it later.
Yeah,
2 seconds. So
exactly, yeah. So anyway, so St. Lucie is well behind first place. They're 9 games back. The Hammerheads were originally in sole possession of first place. Well, they lost one half of the doubleheader on Sunday against St. Lucie, so that knocked them down a half game, and the Palm Beach Cardinals are now tied with them. So, you know, either way, it doesn't really matter because, again, St. Lucie's 9 games back, but, you know, 9 games to the Hammerheads, 9 games to the Palm Beach Cardinals, whatever, it's still 9 games. Still definitely not optimal.
And now, for today's fun football scores. Nerves nil, friends made 11. Goals 4, giggles 17.
Wheelchair access 1, feeling left out 0.
Celebrations 3, high fives 21.
McDonald's Fun Football. Free football coaching for all kids aged 5 to 11. Search McDonald's Football to find out more.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify, the all-in-one commerce platform to start, run, and grow your business. Whether you're selling flaky salt or fine art prints, Shopify covers all your sales channels to simplify selling online and in person. Plus, they provide industry-leading tools and 24/7 support to ignite your growth. This is Possibility, powered by Shopify. To sign up, visit shopify.co.uk/podcast23, all lowercase.
This is Emma.
Hiya.
Emma works at McDonald's in Merthyr Tydfil. She's a shift manager, a vital part of the team.
Well, I try.
But more importantly, Emma's a mum of three. So when she decided to come back to work, Emma needed hours that fitted with her kids' school days.
I really did.
So we did what we could to make that happen.
And it helped a lot.
Well, you're part of our family too, Emma.
Aw, thanks.
Let's balance life and work together. Apply today at mcdonalds.co.uk/jobs.
This week on Get Hench,
we're talking to top athletes about how they remain at the top.
Hey, Sergey, wait up. Sergey!
Carl, why are you here?
I saw you run out of the house. What are you doing?
I'm running.
Yeah, but what are you running from?
The cops. No, I'm running and listening to our podcast.
You're going to need a better alibi than that, bro. Hey? I'll get your passport and I know a guy who can get us a car. After that, we're on our own.
No, I just want to listen to my podcast.
Don't wombat it, meerkat it.
Simples.
All right, so with the month of April done and over now, we're going to take a look at our top prospects. We're going to see how they've done, how the stocks are doing, like a month into the season. Month plus, really. Syracuse played a little bit in March, and full disclosure, I'm kind of lazy, and I included this past week's numbers into things, and it's May, but whatever, close enough. So first up is our number one prospect, Francisco Alvarez, and he hit 250, 368, 688 in four games in Syracuse, and then he got called up to the Mets because of Omar Narváez's injury, and his time on the MLB roster has kind of been hit and miss, touch and go. He's hitting 213, 245, 298 as a whole, not factoring in Sunday's game, but he's definitely starting to look more comfortable at the plate. He hit a home run today.
He almost hit a home run today.
Oh, excuse me. Yeah, that's right. That's right. It was like 4 inches under the line. He hit a very loud double. You know, I think he's hitting like 300 in his last like six games or something like that.
I'll admit I was quite concerned with how he looked initially, but he seems to have like corrected things.
Yeah,
he definitely was not. He was definitely jittery at first, I think. Like he was definitely trying to do too much, and then Buck just started playing him more. And
whoa. He was better. Play young players? No,
he was better once he played more. You know,
that's crazy.
That's I don't buy that.
Who would have thunk?
He also looks good defensively.
Yeah, so I read something like
his framing numbers are
second or third. Right, he's like second or third in the league in like framing runs saved or framing
framing stuff is really nice. And he looks fine, totally fine back there. Obviously, I don't think he's thrown out anyone, but with 2023
bases,
I don't. It's like impossible.
Yeah, so how long is Narváez out for? At least another month.
He's on the 60. They put him on the 60 for a while.
Oh, okay. So
I wouldn't be surprised if it's Narváez and Alvarez.
I say this as like one of the biggest defenders of Tomas Nito. He has reached offensive levels that are too bad.
That's like I am with you in the defense of him, and also I agree. Like I think. And if the team is still scuffling a bit, even if they're not scuffling a bit, obviously they're going to not, I don't think they're going to be in first place by the time Narváez comes back unless something Herculean happens. But they're probably going to need the offense, and Narváez could hit righties, and then you could kind of use Alvarez as like a fancy half DH guy. You know, you could kind of get creative with that. Mm-hmm. It might be three catchers. I don't know.
Well, we'll see. But yeah, Tomas Nito is it's not great.
He looks cooked. Like he straight up does. He looks done.
Which is wild. Like I mean, look, he's not a good. I never thought he'd be a good hitter. But how are you supposed to predict this level of offensive collapse in this game? Much with like a lot of the problems with the Mets this year, it's just like. Yeah, this was a possibility, but this was a fifth or 10th percentile outcome, and everyone's hitting it at the same time. It's nuts.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Which I don't know if that makes me I flip-flop on if that's optimism or pessimism, that this can't continue anymore, or, oh, Jesus, they're screwed. You know what I mean? It's like, I don't even know how to, like, analyze it either, because no. it's so all over. And it's not all over, but you know what I mean. It's so, like, unpredictable. Like, if Marte was cooked but everyone else was fine, sure. Kano was cooked but everyone else was fine, sure. But everyone? Everyone's cooked at once.
Was cooked?
Yeah, like...
If half of these guys were cooked and they didn't have weird injuries, it'd be fine. But they're all cooked and have weird injuries. It's ridiculous.
It's crazy. Hey, yeah.
It's the Mets. one guy who's definitely holding up his side of the bargain so far is number two prospect, Kode Senga. Mets are giving him plenty of rest in between starts. You know, I'm not going to say they're babying him, but they're definitely handling him carefully. But if he keeps pitching the way he has, I have no problem with the way that they're using him, you know, giving him 6-7 days in between starts. So far, he has a solid 3.38 ERA in 32 innings, 25 hits allowed, 22 walks, and 36 strikeouts. You know, the walks have always kind of been an issue with him. Maybe not this exaggerated, but it's part of who he is. We all knew that. And outside of the walks, really, there's nothing else to complain about. You know, he's doing exactly what the Mets need him to do.
I like to see him pitch deeper into games, but that's also tied to the walks.
Yeah.
He's throwing so many pitches and innings and all that stuff. It's tough, but he looks good.
Uh-huh. All right. Number three prospect, Brad Beatty. He was very impressive in 9 games at Syracuse. He was hitting 400, 500, 886 when they called him up. And it's been 16 games now since he's been on the major league roster.
Well, you mean once he hit those developmental goals, right?
Steve? Right, right, of course, yes. Once he developed. You know, he struggled a little bit at first, kind of like Alvarez, but he's kind of getting more regular playing time. And lo and behold, now he's hitting 294, 357, 471.
What's his strikeout rate at this point? I haven't checked. Did he get it below 30?
That's a good question. Let's see. Brett Beatty. Oops. That's not Brett Beatty. That's J.J. Bidet. Brett Beatty. His strikeout rate. I don't think that Fangraphs factors in today's game. So.
Not for strikeout rate.
Yeah. No. So it is.
Oh, is it in the today's date?
It should be in the today's game thing at the top.
I wasn't sure if it was.
His strikeout rate is 23.2%.
Nice.
And his walk rate is 8.9.
I mean, why was.
I know.
See, it'd be easier to. Like, I've been making this point on Slack and a little bit on Twitter. Like, I can't feel angry at the Mets front office necessarily for the way the major league roster has turned out. And then I'm like, should we be mad at them for the way the prospect development is going? I don't know that we should, but then they do things like don't make Brett Beatty the starting third baseman. And they, you have to call everything they do into doubt because that was very obvious at the time.
Yeah. He should have broke as soon as Correa didn't sign. Should have been. Like heavily pencil. I'm talking about like, sure, you don't want to pen him in yet. You want to make the pencil mark real dark so it's hard to erase, but you can still erase it if you need to. But he should have just been the guy. And then they were like letting him mess around in Syracuse for like a week, doing nothing. And then hitting ninth or whatever, an eighth. Like, okay, cool. He gets a single to no one because. Mm-hmm. Canna strikes out or whatever, you know.
My hot take is that he should be batting second at this point until Marte is back.
They moved him up to what, fifth, I think, today. Yeah, he's protecting Alonso.
Because it was McNeil hit second, I think, or third, something like that.
Anyway, Brett Beatty is good.
Yeah, I mean. Yeah, basically right now, Corbin Carroll has a very firm grasp on Rookie of the Year. But if Beatty keeps playing like he's been playing, it's gonna be there's gonna be a fight. between the two of them.
Mm-hmm. It's real James Altman hours. Come on.
Yeah, James Altman might also be. I have something of a provocative take here. Should we have ranked Brett Beatty higher than Francisco Alvarez? I think the answer is yes.
I mean, you have to factor also defensive position and stuff, and just Alvarez as a catcher that has offensive ability is more valuable than a third baseman who has offensive ability.
Because if Alvarez was, if we were sure that he wasn't a catcher and he was a DH, then like I don't think
that then would like crater his
I mean, I'm more talk. I don't know. I think Brady's off. This was also somewhat informed by Alvarez's early struggles, and he's improved since. So, just an idea. They're both doing well. It's nice to see.
Also, Beatty looks like has gone well. Beatty looks like a star. Like I know this is like hot take city at this point, but Beatty looks like he could be like a for reals guy.
Yeah.
Everything
looked overmatched.
It looks great.
His defense hasn't even looked that bad.
It's been fine.
Yeah. I mean, I've said since, I don't even know how long I've been saying that. Defensively, he's fine. I feel like as prospect, ranker, watcher, evaluators, whatever we call ourselves, we kind of pre-program in ourselves that if a guy is not a awesome defensive player at his position, then that's like a major liability red flag. When in reality, as a baseball player, you know, like you're not the greatest at what you do. It's okay. You're good enough. And Beatty's always been to good enough. You know, the last year, 2 years, whatever, in Brooklyn and Binghamton. He was kind of bad when I saw him in Kingsport, but that was also like he was 19, freshly drafted, and he was, I don't want to say he was fatter, but he was definitely
stockier.
Yeah.
And also he didn't have professional defensive coaching.
Right, exactly. Yet. Yeah.
He was playing third or whatever in Texas. Like, I'm sure his high school coaches know what they're talking about, but it's not the same.
No.
It's not the same rep work, it's not the same time he's putting in. It's like this is his job, so all he's doing is working on his craft at this point. He's not going to school, which he needs to do, of course. I'm not saying don't go to school to play third base, but you know what I mean. He's able to put more time into all of it now.
Yep. All right. Number four, Kevin Parada. Through 21 games, Parada's hitting .238, .340, .425 with two homers, 12 walks, and 24 strikeouts. He was in a pretty deep slump as recently as mid-April. At the lowest point, he was hitting .208, .361, .333. But he woke up the last two series, the last eight games or so, especially in the power department. He has four doubles, a triple, and a home run in his last couple of games. So that's
he hit a bomb on Friday. Like,
that's good.
Like a big boy homer on Friday.
Definitely good that he's finally waking up. But all that in mind, I'm going to have to say that he's kind of stocked down just because like our expectations were a lot higher than what he's doing right now, which is not objectively terrible, but not particularly great either. I mean, do you really want your first round high level college hitter hitting .238, .340, .425 with not great defense, you know?
Honestly, okay, Lucas, go ahead. Cause I'm
go. I was going to say that I know the sample is small. I don't want to jump to any conclusions. I also know he's picked it up this week. I think they need to change the swing. Like,
yeah, he had a kind of funky swing always.
It's like gotten funkier. He's practically like tilting his bat towards the ground down his back. It doesn't make any sense. Like, and the sad reality is I don't have any faith in the Mets to correct that in a semi-intelligent way.
Hey, if it works for Kevin Youkilis, it'll work for Kevin Brock.
Yes.
Okay.
The two things I was going to say, because they're separate, is the defense is so bad you might have to move him. Like, it's bad. It's like almost unplayably bad. Obviously, you could wait a little bit on that, but it's rough. And also, if you have to rank the 25 top prospects today, would you guys put him one? Because I would not.
No, definitely not.
What do you mean one?
Like one overall as a Met, as the Mets' top 25 prospects.
Oh, right. Today. 1, 2, and 3 are basically all gone with Alvarez, Beatty, and Kuzenga. Yeah.
It's Jet now. Like he's the number one prospect, and Lucas was right now. Lucas is correct from his hot take from the beginning of the season.
We'll take that as a victory.
I'm trying to think if I would even have Parada. No, I mean, I guess he still would be two for me because the rest of the system has been so underwhelming. Which I'm sure we're going to get to. So carry on, Steve.
All right. So yeah, number 5, Jet Williams. Through 9 games, he's hitting right now .231, .429, .534 with one home run, 6 steals, and 21 strikeouts. The average is not great, but, you know, whatever. OBP is fantastic. Strikeouts, not excessive. Lack of power is a little concerning, but, I mean, you can't really say anything is... He's not doing anything wrong. You know, I'm going to say that his stock is holding just because, A, it's so early, and B, there's nothing that he's doing wrong. And he also had a little injury issue at the end of April, you know, complicating things. He missed, I think, like 4 games, 3 games, whatever it was.
Yeah, what was that? I don't think I ever saw anything about what that was.
He got hit by a pitch, and then was out. So,
I don't care.
Yeah. I mean, he came back on the field, so it's not like he got hit and broke anything.
Mm-hmm.
So, but yeah, I mean, Jed is young. You know, it's his first taste of professional baseball. He's, you know, again, the walk rate is fantastic. He's not striking out excessively. I can deal with that. Well, he learns to, you know, get better bat on ball, you know?
I agree.
Yep. It's been a little bit more passive than I would like at the plate, but I prefer that to the alternative.
Yeah, it's better to get
It's showing an ability to walk and everything.
Right, it's better to get into good habits like that, being a little too passive and taking your walks than just becoming a crazy swinger. All right, number 6, Blade Tidwell. Tidwell currently has a 5.40 ERA in 16.2 innings over 4 starts. He's allowed 14 hits, he's walked 10, and he struck out 26. 10 walks is a little concerning in 16.2 innings, but, you know, Tidwell's never a pinpoint control guy. I think that's something that'll normalize itself with some more innings, because he's never been, like, a crazy, wild pitcher either. I'm going to just say his stock is holding, because everything else, you know, has looked solid. The fastball looked good, sliders looked good, strikeout numbers are great. He's just walking too many guys right now. But at 16.2 innings, 1 or 2 walks in a game could you know, that translates to like, you know, a 6 walk per 9 rate.
I've seen him. Go ahead, Lucas.
No, that's I'm much more concerned about the velocity holding into starts than I am about the control at the moment. But yeah,
it's I've seen him only on TV, but I've seen him a few times now, and it's very much his sweeper is clearly. It's clearly his best pitch, and he locates it like pretty much whatever he wants. But everything else is like he has trouble locating stuff, and that's just stuff. It'll come with time. But there'll be a bat where his fastball is like not Senga level, but it'll not even be close. And then he'll like dot a slider, and I'm like, what the hell does that come from? You know what I mean? like how could you do both? It's kind of backwards to me. But the pitch is good. Like his main pitch is good right now. It's really just the fastball slider that he's doing a lot of his work on, but. You can see the building blocks for him, which is nice.
Yeah. Yep.
And his shoulder is so far healthy, which is arguably the most important part.
Yeah. That's...
He has been on the field.
Yep.
He is pitching. That's what we want. All right. Number 7, center fielder Alex Ramirez. He has appeared in 21 games for Brooklyn this season now. He is currently hitting .259, .330, .341 with one homer. 4 steals and 7 walks to 19 strikeouts. Ramirez played half a season in Brooklyn last year. He played in 67 games for them And for that reason, I'm going to say that Ramirez's stock is down.
I agree.
Nope. I think that he has 67 games of experience at this level. He's faced guys that can spot their fastballs, locate their breaking balls a little bit better. We really have not seen much improvement in that regard.
Mm-hmm.
And it is what it is.
Yeah. He needs to be better at the level if he's going to repeat it.
Yep. Right, exactly. I mean, and he's still young, so he has time. And Brooklyn, we know, is kind of a weird environment.
Especially early.
Yeah, yeah.
It's
cold sometimes.
I would have liked for the Mets to try harder to trade him this past offseason. Just to make a win now move, because I was not a huge fan, but I hope that he can have a bit of a bounce back and they can actually parlay him into something useful.
Yeah, well, once the weather starts getting warmer, we'll see. Love those. God, what was it like this week? Freaking like 49 degrees.
Yeah.
Love those 49 degree nights in Coney Island when it's kind of wet, moist. All right. Next, I'm going to do these two guys simultaneously because they're just both really doing really good. Number 8, number 9, Mark Vientos and Ronnie Mauricio. In 30 games, Vientos is hitting .339, .424, .696 with 10 home runs, 16 walks, and 28 strikeouts. And in 32 games, Mauricio is hitting .333, .370, .581 with 6 homers, 6 steals, 6 walks, and 25 strikeouts. Both guys, obviously, stocks are way up.
Yeah.
Bigger thing, I think, is what do the Mets do here? Because, I don't know, the Mets are kind of struggling. Mauricio and Vientos are both socking cover off the ball. Do you risk, bringing one or both up and having them basically suck, for lack of better words, I guess, and who do you replace them on the roster with? I don't know. There's a lot of questions regarding the Mets roster, and both of these guys are kind of forcing the question, I guess. And I don't know if there's any good answers right now. I look at Mauricio's numbers, I look at Vientos's numbers, and then I just feel like, yeah, they can't do that. They're just gonna suck at the major league level.
Yeah, it's time for them to put up or shut up in the majors, because clearly AAA is doing nothing for them.
Right.
It's just I could see how you fit Mauricio on the roster, because you just DFA Escobar and that's it. There's your one for one replacement. But it's literally a one for one. I guess you don't really want him to take right handed DH at bats, but it's fine. You could just use Pham, and then McNeil could play the outfield and Mauricio could play second, whatever. But with Vientos, he just doesn't play anywhere. He's a short side of the platoon DH. You're going to have that and Vogelbach on your roster, and Vogelbach's hitting. And also, if Vientos was left-handed, then it would be even more funky. But there's just not a lot of left-handers. You just don't see them as much.
If you have to decide between, let's say there's one spot open and you have to decide between the two of them, I have more faith in Vientos being able to produce than I do Mauricio being able to produce, just because of the historical issues that Mauricio has had. And, personally, me not believing that he's kind of outgrown them yet, just based on 2 weeks, 3 weeks, whatever of production,
Yeah, it's weird. I kind of wish they could just fuse into one player.
Oh, God, if you could, that would be...
Because then...
And then it'd be Francisco Lindor, basically.
Sure, but if Vientos could play a defensive position, then I'd be fine with him getting the call first. But if you're going to cut Escobar for him, then your bench has, two players on it who could play the field. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. How is that sustainable?
Right, that's why I said it's such a...
Yeah, it's so hard. At least Mauricio played third and second and whatever.
Right. It's what other time have you had a prospect where he's 10 home runs in literally a month and you know, Mauricio is on his way. He's on his way to like a 25-25 season. And you look at both of these guys and you're just kind of like, I don't know, man. Like 10 years ago, 2013, who was like the best prospect? You would have Cesar Puello is doing decently. And we were like, oh my God.
Yeah.
And now we see both these guys doing a lot better than Puello did. And we're just kind of like,
I think their histories and we know the run environment is insane right now. And like, it's not discounting Mauricio's taken steps and Vientos is doing all the damage that he could be doing, even though he needs to probably hit the ball more still. It's just, they're tough roster fits because there's not a guy on the bench who you could be like, yeah, if Guillorme could play the outfield too, then you could do that. Or, you know, or if Pham could play the infield, you could do that, but they can't. Like it's not a very flexible bench.
Yep, and exactly.
It makes it hard to fit those guys on the roster.
Yeah. I mean, the ironic thing is that I don't want to call up Mauricio because I think he's going to suck at the major league level. And like, I think there's a chance some team would be duped into thinking he's more valuable than he is right now in a trade. Whereas Vientos, I think, Vientos I could buy as like a legitimate bench hitter. Like I'm much more willing to buy that role. But to Thomas's point, like Vientos doesn't fit positionally and Mauricio kind of does. So I think my answer is don't call up either of them just because I don't believe in Mauricio, though.
I feel Mauricio definitely feels like if he came up to the major league, he would initially struggle, like most prospects do. Nothing against him. He would fall into worse habits than Vientos would. Vientos's issues are different from Mauricio's issues. And like, I feel like Mauricio's issues could definitely get away from him very quickly.
It's also, if you're going to call them up, neither one is going to play a ton unless you're to take away playing time from Canna and using McNeil as a corner outfielder. And like, this is specifically the, if you're calling it Mauricio, because Vientos is just a DH, like, just that's all he's gonna do. Pete Alonso is there to play first base. He can't play third. He's a DH. Like, if you're calling him up, it's because you want him to hit. That's fine. But with Mauricio, like, I don't know how much he's gonna play unless you start having Canna lose playing time, and then McNeil's in left, and then Mauricio's playing second, and that's not the cleanest fit. But then they're gonna come up and play a little. Like with Beatty, he was coming up and he was. Obviously, they messed around with it, but he's the third baseman. It took him like 10 games to be the third baseman. It didn't take him very long. Alvarez is the catcher. It took him a little longer, but you know, he's the catcher. Mauricio's not going to be the second baseman, which is Jeff McNeil's there. Like, he's too good. He's not the problem. He's replacing a bench player. So I just don't really. It's tough. Mm-hmm. It's a tough ask for him, too. Hey, come up to a team with the intention, a veteran team with the intention of being a contender, and you're going to be a bench bat. That's tough. Have to ask a rookie to do that.
Yep. All right. Number 10, Dominic Hamill. And he's appeared in 5 games for the Rumble Ponies. And he currently has a 2.18 ERA and 20.2 innings with 15 hits allowed, 13 walks, and 27 strikeouts. Personally, I'm going to say stock is holding. Walks are really bad earlier in the first couple of starts. He's getting them down now. He's had 2 consecutive starts with good strikeout totals. You know, you just want to see everything kind of normalize, I guess, for another couple of starts before you could say, like, get excited.
Yeah.
Basically. He's slightly down for me just because of the walks.
Yeah.
I saw so many outings with it was like 4 innings because he would strike out 9 and walk 5. I'm like, oh, Jesus. Mm-hmm. it's hard to get excited about a pitching prospect like that because if he's walking people in like double A and high A and stuff, he's going to get hit in the majors. It's hard, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So just slightly down because I still think the stuff is there. He just needs to start putting it in the zone.
Yeah. All right, number 11 is Calvin Ziegler, and he had surgery to remove bone spurs from his pitching elbow like around the beginning of the season. So best case scenario, he comes back to the field sometime over the summer. But who knows, because the Mets, nothing goes right.
Carlos Carrasco hours.
Yeah. I'll move on now. Number 12, Mike Vassell. And Vassell's appeared in 5 games for Binghamton. So far, he has a 3.27 ERA in 22 innings with 13 hits allowed, 4 walks, and 34 strikeouts. That's stock up for me just because, like, holy crap. That's an incredible strikeout to walk ratio for a starting pitcher.
Stock up for sure.
I think he's going to be overrated by, like, general Mets Twitter, but his stock is still up.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, even if he's a reliever, that's nice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Number 13, Stanley Consuegra. And in 20 games now with Brooklyn, he's hitting 276, 356, 553 with 4 home runs, 2 steals, and 9 walks to 18 strikeouts. It's a big, big stock up for me.
Yep.
You know, we've basically lumped him and Alex Ramirez together because, you know, they're both similar aged outfield prospects. They've basically been on the same team for like a year plus now, whatever. We've lightly touched on the fact that the difference in talent between the two of them is not as stark as a lot of people realize. I think at this point, I'm on record as favoring Consuegra over Ramirez.
I am there too.
Yeah, Ramirez, I feel, has a higher floor, but Consuegra has louder, like, impact tools. You know, he has the power. He has an okay swing. There's going to be a lot of hit and miss there, but, you know, you could say the same exact thing about Alex Ramirez, too, and he does not have the pop that Consuegra shows.
And he shows game power.
Yeah.
Like, he's doing this in games. He's hitting slugging 5-something.
Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. It's not like he's taking loud batting practice and then hitting 2 singles. Like, he's hitting the ball hard with authority.
Yeah.
They should probably be calling him up at this point. Not to the Mets, to Double A. But
I mean, the Mets might be able to use that. I don't know. Drastic times call for drastic measures.
If Michael Harris could do it, am I right?
Right, exactly. In order to beat the Braves, you need to play their own game.
Yep.
All right. Number 14, Jacob Reimer. And he started out the month a little slow, but by the end of the month now, he's kind of found his groove. And he's hitting 260, 408, 325 in 23 games. You know, average is fine. On-base percentage is fantastic. 15 walks to 70 strikeouts in 23 games. Yes, it's very similar to Jet. You know, the average is like whatever, but great on-base, great strikeout ratios. Lack of power is a little concerning, but they're still young. It's still early in the season. So it's not, you know, like catastrophically, like, oh my God, what is wrong with this guy? You know, if it was July and he still had a 0.65 ISO, I'd be like, all right, this is not great, but it's 77 at bats, you know?
Yeah.
Stop hitting the ball on the ground challenge.
You're going young Brett Beatty mode.
As I say, yeah, work for Beatty. So.
He's going young. So then that's what is going to happen. He's going to lift the ball and be one of the best prospects in baseball. You heard it here first.
Nice.
But I think we as a consensus were a little bit higher on him to start. But, I mean, for us, maybe the stock is holding. But for the general opinion, I think it should be stock up. Like,
I agree.
This is a fourth round pick playing at this level. Like, that's pretty nice.
Yeah, yeah. All right, number 15 is Joel Diaz, and he had Tommy John surgery right before the season started, so he's going to miss the entire year. And same can be said about number 16, Matthew Allen. He had UCL revision surgery, which is basically Tommy John.
This is depressing.
So, yeah, yeah. This is the where it gets sad now. This is the part where it gets sad. Number 17, Jose Budo. He had a weird first month of the season. You know, got called up because of all the injuries and suspensions and whatever. He's pitched decently, to his credit, an even 3 ERA in 12 innings over a couple of starts in a relief outing. I'm just interested to see, like, what becomes of Budo. You know, Verlander's back, Scherzer's back. David Peterson got sent to AAA, but I think, you know, if you compare Budo and Peterson, I feel like Peterson is the better of the two.
I'm still calling up Peterson first in case of emergency.
So,
but can Peterson pitch better?
Just pitch, I know.
Better forehead.
I mean, he could, but is the question. So, I don't even really know how to grade. I mean, I guess it's just stock up just because Budo got called up and he didn't look, he didn't get destroyed. He looked all right, so.
He looks like if you need him to start against, like, a bad team, you can and it'll be fine. Like, it might not be great, but you could win that game anyway. Mm-hmm. I'm not throwing him. If you have to throw him against Atlanta, you're sweating him, you know? But if he can pitch against the eight, and there's plenty of bad teams on the schedule, like, that's kind of what baseball is now. Most teams are bad. Like, if he has to go pitch against the Reds or something, it might be okay. Or, like, the A's, it was fine, you know?
Yeah, like he can give you four or five innings to keep you in the game. Great.
Yeah, he's not good, at least right now. But he has a cutter thingy. I guess it's like a slider cutter thing that looks a little better. It makes him more of a depth guy than he was before when he was just that changeup fastball. It was not good.
I'm comfortable with Jose Budo seventh or eighth. No, not seventh. Eighth or ninth starter. Like, if that's
and that's fine.
Yeah, like, unfortunately, the Mets are on their ninth and tenth starters.
Just thinking, like, who is? I don't even know who's in the pitching rotation right now.
Neither do the Mets.
Joey Lucchese pitched today on, like, 4 days rest. Like,
yeah. Did not do great. What happens, I guess, when you're asking your seventh starter to pitch on 4 days rest?
Fresh off Tommy John surgery.
Fresh off Tommy John surgery. Not the situation that we expected things to be on beginning of May.
Yeah.
All right. Number 18 now, right-handed pitcher Lionel Avias. And Avias has made 5 appearances, 4 starts, and a relief outing with St. Lucie. He has a 4.82 ERA in 18.2 innings with 14 hits allowed, 8 walks, and 15 strikeouts. It's still a pretty small sample size because of the innings, amount of innings. You know, we're talking 2 five-inning games, 1 4-inning game, 1 3.2-inning game. You know, I'm just going to say holding because his peripheral numbers look decent. And once he starts pitching a little more, you know, hopefully his walk rate, his strikeout rates, things start, balancing out a little bit better.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. That seems reasonable. I've not watched, I don't think I've actually seen any of his performances this year. So I don't have any impression whether his stuff is backed up at all.
The numbers, everything is more or less, I think the spin rates are down a little bit, but not enough that you would be like concerned about anything, you know?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. That's me also, not doing again, my homework.
It's the beginning of the year also. So if a guy's, you know, I vaguely remember like his average spin rate or something is down like 110 RPM or something, like, that'll come. All right. Number 19, Bryce Mantis-Oka. He started the season on the injured list. I just feel bad for this guy. So not even just because of the injuries, but just this situation. You know, he needed surgery to have bone chips taken out of his elbow. And then while they do that, they notice his UCL is fried, and they give him Tommy John surgery while he's already on the operating table. Like, imagine waking up to that news.
Yeah, I'd be so upset. It's crazy.
I mean, like, I don't know the medical ethics of all of that. I'm assuming that, you know, when the doctors open you up, you know, if there's an issue, you already have given pre-approval that, you know, do anything that you need to do, whatever, but that just sucks.
I would also 100% bet that there was some idea that this might be necessary beforehand, right? You don't just go in there without doing pre-imaging or anything. Like,
yeah.
They probably told him beforehand, like, yeah, we see a little bit of damage here. you might not need it, but if we're in there and it looks bad, we're going to fix it. Like, it's not like he wakes up like, you did what?
Yeah.
Right. It's like, wait,
surprise.
Not that it doesn't suck, but it wasn't to that extent.
Yeah.
And he would have been like on the major league team now.
Okay.
It just sucks for him. Like, this was the break. This was the time.
Mm-hmm. He got, what was it, like 10 games last year or 10 innings, whatever it was. A little bit of time. I don't want to say that his spot in the bullpen was like guaranteed and safe, but I think he was definitely a preferable option to some of the other guys there.
At least in spring, I was pretty confident he was going to make the team the way he was pitching. He looked like one of the 10 best, not 10, whatever it is, 13, whatever best relievers that the Mets had. Right. He looked like he was part of that group 100%.
He was not Jimmy Yacobonis. All right, number 20 is shortstop Jesus Baez. He hasn't played in any games yet. We've gotten some good reviews from people in the organization, and his numbers in the DSL last year are decent, so I'd expect that he starts the year in the complex, Florida complex, when the season starts in a couple of weeks. So, you know, holding just because he hasn't played or anything.
Yep.
I'm a little bit down just because he didn't start the year in full season ball after all the talking up they did. But
that's, sure, that's fair, but...
Yeah. Anyway.
Hype you up and then knock you down. Number 21, Junior Santos. He has 5 starts under his belt so far this year, and he has a 6.85 ERA in 23.2 innings with 30 hits allowed, 13 walks, and 18 strikeouts. Peripherals were all trending in the wrong direction. You know, I hate to say it, we're like 3 years of him being in full season ball now. We're still waiting for like a marquee game for him. And it's just a stock down. Like,
yeah.
And yes, he has interesting size. Yes, he has interesting pitch characteristics. Yes, he's still one of the youngest pitchers in the Eastern League. But it's just, like I said, it's just, we don't have one single thing that you can like hang your head on with him, you know? The numbers aren't great. They haven't been. Things are trending in the wrong direction. I really can't think of a single moment when I was just looking at, you know, start or numbers and be like, okay, good, he can really start building from this point on, you know, just none of that.
He gives me energy of the guy who gets traded as a throw-in and then is someone fixes him or figures it out.
Yeah.
But I don't know if that's going to happen here.
I don't need to say anything. I'm good.
You've said all that needs to be said.
Yes.
All right, number 22 is center fielder Willy Fañez. He has not played in any games yet. Unlike Simon Juan, he's a little bit on the older side because of the contract shenanigans that the Angels pulled when he first signed. He was 18 last year. He turned 19 in January. Even though he didn't really dominate the DSL last year, he wasn't horrible either. So those things combined, I could see the Mets maybe him bringing him stateside this year when the season starts. You know, the DSL starts a little bit before, so maybe he gets into a couple of games and then comes stateside, but I don't know. Either way, he hasn't played, so.
Yep.
Not much to say, really. Number 23, Eric Orsi. Mm. He started the year with AAA Syracuse, and through 9 games now, he has a 10.50 ERA in 12 innings with 13 hits allowed, 8 walks, and 11 strikeouts. All the peripherals have trended in the wrong directions. He's giving up a ton of hits. He's giving up a lot of hard contact. You know, if he had a better April, given everything that's going on with the Mets right now, he probably would have gotten a call. But it's just, he's struggling. Struggles have definitely come at the wrong time.
Grant Hartwig better.
Yeah, yep. He is.
Yep.
Which sucks.
Yep. Did Orsi ever get, has he had any major league time? But did he get like an inning or two, or am I misremembering?
No.
No. Because he was like the next guy up last year, and then he just gave up every home run.
Yeah, every single kind of this,
right.
Kind of the same thing, like, yeah, like it's kind of the same thing happened. Like, it was starting to look like, okay, it might be his time, and then he just crapped the bed.
Yeah, basically.
I think he was also on the injured list, too, for a little bit last year. Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. So, yeah, I don't know. Poor Orzy. Number 24 is Simon Juan. He's not played yet. I think that he'll probably play in the DSL. You know, he was 16 last year. He wasn't particularly great, so.
Yep.
Have another go at it. Yep.
Yep.
And last but not least is number 25, William Lugo. And he started the year in extended spring training. He was just recently signed to Brooklyn. He's only played in a couple of games, so I'm going to just say stock holding because he really has not done anything good or bad.
That's fair.
Yeah, we have no clue. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, as a whole, the system gets very – the dynamics of things change very, very much, very quickly at, like, 12 or so. You know, you have the top 10, and then once you get past, like – Vassell and like Raymer, and then that's the end of it, basically.
Is it Raymer or Reimer? I don't know that we've settled on a pronunciation here.
I don't know. I probably say both.
I do too.
Yeah.
Apparently, Buteau is actually Buteau, according to the broadcast.
Well, it's Jose Buteau, and too bad. We're from Brooklyn, and that's the end of it.
Hmm. I see.
I always said Reimer in my head.
This is a pretty sad system.
It's crazy, right? Like they make all these hires that on the surface make sense, that should be analytically inclined, and look, we're only like 6 weeks less into the minor league season. Like, that's not enough of a sample size to draw any conclusions, but the early signs here are like, who is stock up in the system? And I don't mean like marginal stock up. Like, where's the notable breakout here, right? Where's the pitching dev success? Where's the random seventh round college guy getting turned into an actual reliever? Like,
like Tyler Stewart has been interesting.
That's a good call. That's a good show.
Yeah, there's a couple of guys that are obviously not in the top 25 list that are having decent seasons that maybe might turn themselves into something.
But you need to be doing better. Like, all of it is connected, right? Like, if we look at the major league roster, like, there are risks associated with having all these old guys, but if you're the Mets, that's your only choice because your development system is not producing the kind of players you need to not have a roster with an average age of 35.
And as we get, as there's less guys and less guys who are out there to, as there's less guys and less guys to call up, and there's this stuff is not working, going to have to keep going back to the well, the free agent well, constantly. And sometimes you're going to get years like this where, I mean, obviously it's May and look at the Phillies. I'm sure the Phillies podcasts were going nutso last year, and now here they were, you know, going to the World Series, so anything could happen. But like, it's been tough because it's when you have to take these risks, like Lucas said, sometimes Mark Canna isn't good anymore, you know, like just to pull a name out of a hat. Sometimes Starling Marte takes a step back physically and it hurts his game. And then you're just kind of, they don't have anyone to call up.
Yep.
Like the Braves went on that huge run last year because they called all their prospects up. Then now they're on the team. So now they're good, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And the Braves don't really have anyone left, but they don't need anyone because everyone's there. So now that everyone's young in there, they get to recycle, they get to restock the farm system. And then when the farm system's restocked again, it'll be 4 or 5 years from now when some guys are worse, some guys are gone, whatever, you know? So, because obviously they're not keeping everyone. Like Dan's we left and Max Fried is probably going to go because they don't pay anyone after 30 or whatever. So, I don't know.
You mentioned before there's no developmental successes. I'm just going to highlight two. I just thought off the top of my head. Mr. Manny Rodriguez currently has a 3.95 ERA in 13.2 innings at Brooklyn. And Mr. Harris Brody has a 3 ERA in 9 innings with Brooklyn.
And the Manny Rodriguez one is really interesting because he position player convert stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like obviously it's not changing the equation of how sports works. Like Kenley Jansen was a catcher convert. It's not exactly a rare thing, but I just feel like the Mets never did stuff like that.
No, it's the first time I can really remember, like, outside of emergency, you know, position players pitching. I can't recall the last time like a position player transitioned.
Because that dude's just a reliever now.
Mm-hmm.
And who knows? He always threw hard. He had a great arm at shortstop. So mm-hmm. It makes sense. Like, why not? Why would you cut him? Like, keep his career going. You put him in Brooklyn's bullpen. And he's been mostly good. I think he had a bad outing. One of the games I recapped recently, he kind of got lit up. But, of course, reliever's going to get lit up. It's a learning experience. But he's been good most of the times I've watched the Brooklyn game and I've seen him.
I'm trying to think. I feel like the last time that the Mets actually changed up was like Marcus De La Cruz.
I don't even remember who that was, if I'm being honest.
Or like, what the hell is it? Yukari De La Cruz, maybe? Like,
We're going back.
I'm going back like 2012 Savannah Sand Nats. Like,
oh man.
Yeah, like I'm gonna actually look that up. I'm gonna try to find if I could find the last guy that they changed. Who it doesn't even have to be good, just a guy that they like changed.
I Grant Hartwig fits that bucket as in this bucket to a degree as well. Like,
as a guy who popped, yeah.
I agree. Yeah, like
yeah.
But it's not good enough, like.
No.
Especially when you see guys, and like I'm obviously never been a Junior Santos fan, but Jared Seidler, who is much more experienced and has watched him more and knows more than I have ever known about any of this stuff, has commented that there's some interesting stuff with Santos that the Mets just have never made anything of, right? Like. And I look at a guy like Dominic Hamill, and like there's good stuff here, and the Mets can't make more of it than what it is. Like, they just don't get the most out of their guys, basically.
Yeah, it's frustrating.
And that is literally the point of the system. Is, you know, you don't want to have guys. Okay, like we know they're good, and then they just kind of coast on the fact that they've been good. You want guys to come in and then get better. And it's just not really something the Mets, and especially when you figure the way that the Mets, I know that there have been, you know, it's been lauded, and on draft night, it's kind of fun and exciting, but the way that they've been drafting the last couple of years results in something like this, where the system is just completely devoid of depth talent, I guess is a good way to
put it. I think they've their draft strategy has been better in recent years, and it's just...
You can look at it two ways. I think if you look at it from the point of maximizing potential major league ability, there's nothing wrong with it, because that's how you get your Brett Beatty's, Josh Wolf's, and Matthew Allen's, and you know, all in the same draft. Or your, you know, Isaiah Green's and JT Ginn's. You know, like, when you're doing it, front-loading it, like, massively like that... You know, you get the more talented guys, the more likely to become major league players. And at the end of the day, that's all that really matters. But then it leaves your farm system with just crap. And that's kind of when you have a farm system that's full of crap, and then you don't have the developmental ability to get more from the people that you have, then you start having a system like this, where just like devoid of just anything.
And I think last year's draft is going to be, like, they got Williams from it, obviously, and Parada and Reimer, and they should have signed Sproat, but they drafted Sproat, and that was a good call.
Last year's was good because even though it was kind of top-loaded, you can also see the utility in a lot of the guys later on.
Yeah,
which is not something you can say necessarily about, like, 2019 or you know, 2021.
No, they're clearly moving in a more modern direction, and that will beget more minor league talent. But also, I think it's easy to forget how early it is in the Steve Cohen ownership cycle, where, because they won 101 games last year, I don't think anyone expected them to do that so quickly, even though Cohen was saying, like, a World Series in 3 to 5 years or whatever. I mean, owners say that stuff, and I'm not saying I didn't believe him, but it's more like it's so early on in his ownership cycle that the changes that they need to make to be a modern organization they're still learning how to make those changes. Because they were like, the Wilpons were like behind. We're not talking about just a little behind. They were like one of the worst organizations in the sport. So there's a lot of catching up they have to do, and it's just not a lot of time to do it. And it's been frustrating, like, this whole stretch of Mets baseball where all the old guys look like they're taking a step back. And it's like, well, what are they supposed to do? It's like, well, he's going to have to do the same thing next year. He's going to have to, if he doesn't sign Ohtani, he's going to have to sign, like, Matt Chapman, you know? Mm-hmm. Or he's going to have to sign Aaron Nola because who's pitching, you know?
Yep.
When, like, who's coming? There's no one. Unless you're going to rebuild, which you can do. But I don't see why anyone with Steve Cohen's budgetary not unrestrictions would do that. So
budgetary unrestrictions.
I was trying to think of a funny way to say it. But, like, for real, though, like, there's if Steve Cohen came out on a press conference and said, yeah, we're going to tear this team down, I'm like, buddy, you made, like, $2 billion 2 days ago. Like, just spend the money on the Mets. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be weird. It's going to take some time. We have to be patient, and sports are not for the patient. And I'm not a patient person, so.
Really? I had no idea.
Yeah. I have zero patience for stuff. And so it's just, yeah, they're in a weird spot.
Well, hopefully when we do this next, you know, when we review the team a month from now, hopefully things are looking better. if anyone has any questions, comments, or whatever, you can send us an email at our email address from complextoqueens@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter and shoot us questions there. I'm at Steve Saipa. Lucas is at ElvlaHost343. Ken is at Ken1191. Thomas is at ZedMetSeasonSZN. Subscribe to the podcast and rate and review it. And, of course, we thank you for listening. And as a reminder, we are now a Patreon-based outfit, so if you do like our podcast or any of the other ones that are in the Home Run Apple Network, you can subscribe for $5 a month, and you'll get extra things like bonus episodes and exclusive content and just the deep-down satisfaction of knowing that you are helping us. So, until then, next week, love the Mets.